Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the March 8th edition of the Journal, and we'll start with the huge first page story, State Bound, Warrior Boys Basketball Wins One for the Ages, by Lenny Cementi. It took a game and a half for the dust to finally settle in the championship of the Altamont Sectional. When it did, Justin Bozar's bunch was the last one standing in a four-overtime thriller. The Warriors rallied from a 16-point deficit to collect the win, earning advancement to the SIU Super Sectional on March 6 and a spot in the Elite Eight. The Warriors grabbed a spot in the Elite Eight for the first time since 1989 on a wide-open attack from outside the arc in the second half led by Jordan Quinn. The junior rose to the occasion on his 17th birthday, hitting five threes after the break and six total in the game. The Warriors were good on just 2 of 8 in the first two frames before polishing off 10 of 17 in the final two to complete the comeback. Towards the latter part of the game, we needed to find the hot hand, and that just happened to be me, Quinn said. The team played great defense, which gave us better shots on the other end of the floor. That was the best way to top off the night on my birthday. Couldn't have been happier. The junior hit three in the fourth to knot it at 46, forcing overtime, hit another at the end of the first four extra minute period, tying it at 50, and one more at the end of the third extra period, propelling the two teams to the fourth, where the Warriors secured the win. He led all offensively while delivering a double-double, tallying 33 points and 10 rebounds, and amazingly did this after picking up his fourth foul midway through the fourth quarter. What an incredible atmosphere. It exceeded the highest expectations I had going into it, stated Bozarth. Our guys were incredibly resilient and just refused to go away time and time again. Jordan was an absolute monster scoring and rebounding. We think he's an all-state caliber player, and he lived up to that last night. Whenever we needed a big shot, he provided it. The host Indians bellowed "We Will Win" chant from their student section and entered the break on top 27-13 on the back of an 8-point run and looking to be moving on. Bozarth's boy had other plan, ramping up the defensive pressure and forcing wayward Indian three balls in quick possessions, ultimately fueling the offensive comeback. Chris Boyd went to work down low, hitting a bucket early in the third frame before stepping outside for the tray. The Warriors' big men then hit both ends of a one-on-one late, pulling the black and gold to within one, 32-33, heading into the fourth. Sweetenham hit a big three in the period as well, and so did James. Bozarth's entire starting time lineup tackled the bottom of the net from outside the arc in the game, but it was Sweetenham finding his way to the hoop in the fourth that may have saved the day. The Super Saw found his way to 6 points late on a pair of layups and a pair of free throws after drawing a foul in the lane. He added 15 points to his season total in the contest, while Horton delivered 12 points, both donning a pair of threes to the cause after the half. James had one three on his way to 5 points in the game, but did most of his damage on the boards, hauling in 11 rebounds. Boyd and fellow senior Colton Musgrave hit the boards hard, also securing a combined 8 rebounds, grabbing 4 apiece. They were pressing up and trying to get steals. I was just staying aggressive and trying to get to the rim as much as I could, Sweetum said. We ended up by getting to the foul line or with a layup. Horton hit a runner to open the fourth and the final overtime, and Tuscola's student section started the "We Will Win" chant. Altamont answered to knot it at 65, but this time Tuscola pulled in front by 4 and never looked back. Horton battled the big men in the lane for an offensive rebound and found Quinn under the hoop for a bucket, and Sweetenham finished off with a pair of clutch free throws with under 40 seconds left on the clock, giving the Warriors all the cushion they would need. For Jordan and Josiah to play every minute of every game is phenomenal, the coach commented. Part of Altamont's success is they play so many guys and just wear teams down throughout. We're pretty lucky to have two of the best cross-country runners in the state on our roster. Altamont tried and tried, but Josiah just never tired out. And there's a second story on the basketball team by Lenny Cementi. For the second straight year, Tuscola boys basketball lived up to their mantra, build the brand, advancing to the Sweet 16 of Class 1A in Illinois March Madness. Jordan Quinn and the Warriors downed a very good Effingham St. Anthony 48-45 in the first semifinals of the Altamont Sectional. Jordan Quinn finished off an old-fashioned three early in the contest, giving the Warriors a 5-0 advantage. But St. Anthony fired back with a 10-2 run, helping end the first of the on top 12-9. Cam Sweetenham, a big-time deep threat, took to the lane on three straight drives as the two area heavyweights traded blows in the second frame. He then drove and dished to Josiah Horton, who hit Tuscola's first three of the game late in the period, pulling coach Justin Bozarth's bunch to within entering the break down only 20-18. Sweeten and them stopped outside the arc on the third, and Chris Boyd put one back in for a bucket and made the ensuing free throw on a non-traditional three, giving the Warriors their first lead, 26-24, since the three-minute mark of the first. Sweetenham drained his second three in the stanza, and Parker James punctuated the five-point swing in a pivotal period, taking a steal coast-to-coast for a big bucket, pushing the Warriors into the final 8 minutes of the action on top, 33-30. "What a dog bite," Bozarth exclaimed. "In the postseason, you've got to be able to defend on nights that you don't shoot it particularly well. We felt good at the half, knowing the amount of shots we missed. We were only down by 2 points and had given up just 20 points. Tuscola's turned up the defensive to open the second half and just kept increasing the pressure as the game progressed, steadily forcing the Bulldogs into tough situations in the waning minutes. Sweetenham drained his third three of the half early in the final frame. Quinn then added 5 points to the cause in the stanza, and Horton polished off 5 of 5 from the charity stripe after St. Anthony opted to foul in an attempt to extend the game late, sealing the victory. James and Colton Musgrave came up big on the defensive end late, combining to force 4 Bulldog turnovers. Sweetenham was tops in the Warriors' scoring column, delivering 15 points, including 3 threes. Next up was Quinn, who ended his night with 14 points and 9 rebounds. Horton followed with 12 points, while James and Boyd combined for 7 points and 12 rebounds. Musgrave showed out by donating 2 assists, 2 steals, and 2 rebounds in the cause. In the second half, we hit a few big shots with Cam, Jordan, and Parker, and Chris after the half each, and Josiah was so good with the ball in his hands, especially as the game wore on, and St. Anthony increased their pressure. We also decided to bounce back and forth in our defenses to attempt to keep them uncomfortable. We adjusted from our zone press to man-to-man on different possessions. Barker did a great job at the top of the press, and he and Jordan rebounded really well on the defensive end. It was a great atmosphere, and the kids were so fortunate to have the community support that we get. Another first page story, Meyer recommended for FFA state degree by Dominic Stallings. "Personally, I wouldn't mind raising chickens forever," said Claire Meyer. The idea for Meyer to raise over 60 chickens came to her during the 2020 COVID-19 pandemic. It's also what she chose to do for her supervised agricultural experience, SAE, Project for the Future Farmers of America, FFA. She now has over 15 regular customers she plies with farm fresh eggs. "People went crazy about farm fresh eggs," said Meyer. "Farm fresh eggs taste better than store-bought eggs." Her project and many other achievements allowed her to be recommended by Section 17 to receive her Illinois FFFA state degree, which is the highest degree you can achieve in Illinois. "This is a great honor, and she's worked very hard for this degree. Congratulations, Claire. We are so proud of you," said Sarah Schoon, Tuscola agriculture teacher and FFA sponsor. Meyer had to track her SAE projects and keep records for 2 years to work over 750 collected hours and invested over $1,000 in her SAE project or make over $1,500 through her SAE to be able to name off 10 parliamentary procedure rules, take part in at least 25 hours of community service, know basic knowledge about the FFA, and have given 6-minute speech at an agricultural topic to her classes. "I've been around agriculture my entire life, and I've seen the impact it has on people and what we wouldn't be able to do without it. That motivates me to be as successful as I can be with an organization that works so closely with the youth of the ag community," said Meyer. She said the organization lets people learn more about agriculture, especially when they don't grow up on a farm, as she did. "Growing up on the farm made her fall in love with the lifestyle, and she's become quite invested in her chickens." Meyer said she enjoys that they have different personalities that change with different breeds. Competing in different FFA contests allowed her to learn more about helping her chickens. "It taught me hard work and perseverance. I probably wouldn't be as hardworking if I didn't grow up around farmers," said Meyer. Schoon, her agriculture teacher and FFA sponsor, mentored and helped Myers whenever she needed it. "She understood my goal, and she let me understand that it was on me to achieve my goal," said Meyer. Meyer didn't have it easy going for her project. She had to restart her whole record book and re-enter 4 years of data and financial entries into her journal for the project. In the future, Meyer plans to attend Lakeland Community College in Mattoon for agricultural business. She wants to keep working on raising her chickens so she can possibly obtain the FFA American degree, which is the highest degree FFA members can obtain. Only 1% of members obtain the FFA American degree. "Ms. Schoon saw a lot of potential in me, so she allowed me to dive right in. She felt how important it was to me, and I wouldn't have been able to do this without her." Another first page article, VG City Council debates community center flooring. The Villa Grove City Council met on February 27th for a regular meeting. Brian Kessler, senior architect for the Architectural Expressions, was on hand to discuss the proposed changes to the flooring at the new community center. A lengthy, sometimes heated discussion amongst council members ensued. Alderman Garrett and Hooker provided samples of alternatives to wood floors, while Mayor Eversole Gunter insisted the wood floors were necessary for the center to be attractive to sporting competitions. Finally, a vote was called to change the flooring surfaces to wood, and it passed with Garrett voting no. After saying the pledge, the mayor called for approval of the consent agenda, which included the minutes of the regular city council meeting held on February 13, 2023, the financial report for the month ending November 30, 2022, and a key vote for street sweeper brooms replacement. The motion passed unanimously. Administrator Jackie Athey reported that there was a glitch in the software which had delayed her budget prep, but had now been corrected and she would soon have the numbers. Public Works Director Mixell reported that some additional plumbing work was necessary to connect current works to the new separator in the new building, and it will be taking place this week. Finally, the new Director of Community Center Programs and Services, Bethany Sawoska, was introduced on her first day of employment for the City of Villa Grove. An ordinance regarding the use of alcohol on city-owned property was approved unanimously. Next, the council approved a request from Circle K regarding the issuance of additional liquor pour license, and it was approved unanimously, with Alderman Garrett recusing himself from the vote. A change order regarding insulation issues for new and existing buildings in the amount of $19,290 was requested by Ridgeline Construction and was approved unanimously. The council then unanimously approved the purchase of mosquito abatement chemicals from Mugabug in the amount of $2,600. Finally, the council approved the consideration of name changes for East Walnut and East Elm Streets due to 911 considerations. Mayor Eversole Gunter made a short report which included an invitation to all city officials by the United Pentecostal Church for an appreciation dinner to be held April 30th. Another first page article, Bomb Threat Lead to Arrest by Dominic Stallings. After she allegedly made bomb threats to Tuscola schools, Tuscola police arrested Jill Harp, 43, at 2:56 p.m. on Wednesday, March 1st. She was charged with two Class 1 felonies for alleged false terrorism and two Class 3 felonies for alleged disorderly conduct. According to a press release by the Douglas County Sheriff's Office, the Sheriff's Office and Tuscola's Police Department were notified at 12:39 p.m. Wednesday of a bomb threat to North Ward Elementary School. According to Tuscola Police Chief Craig Hastings, the same threat came to East Prairie Middle School and Tuscola High School. The police departments determined that the threat was unfounded, but proceeded with a lockdown at all three schools. The police department searched the school for any threats. It was unlikely there was a bomb, said Chaplin. We'll give it a good look over and do our due diligence until we feel that 100% everything is okay. Parents received a call from the school's emergency phone system, although some parents commented on the Facebook press release that they did not receive a call. Chaplin felt it was important to give closure to parents before the end of the night. He knew the automated call to parents only told them of a lockdown and a bomb threat, but not of any arrests being made. Some of the parents questioned why the schools decided to lock down the students and keep them in one location rather than evacuate them, which would appear safer. Chief Hastings explained that because they knew the bomb threat was unfounded, they determined with the schools that it would be safe for the students to be placed on lockdown. We were pretty confident about what was going on. We had some prior contact with this person and for some other things. We were confident that we wouldn't have to remove students from the building, said Hastings. He added that the initial call also stated that the bomb was inside a vehicle in the parking lot, which weighed heavily on the decision not to remove the children from the school. Chaplin said that the schools were very cooperative and acted quickly. Bomb threats are not as simple as get them all out of the building. There's a lot more to it. They did a good job of working with us in Tuscola with coming up with a plan to get it resolved. Kudos to them, said Chaplin. If the threat to schools were more credible, they would have proceeded to evacuate the students. VG Devilettes coach hosts first prom project by Dominic Stallings. Villa Grove's Devilettes coach, Sarah Budin, is hosting Villa Grove's first prom project event from 4 to 7 p.m. March 15th in the new gym at Villa Grove High School. We want to do this to make sure that everyone can go to prom, said Budin. The prom project allows students to receive a prom dress, shoes, or jewelry free of charge. Budin said she took donations March 7th, but most people who miss the date can still donate before the event. You can contact her on the Villa Grove Devilettes Facebook page to organize a drop-off. We've gotten a very good response in sense of donations. I feel very overwhelmed in a good way, said Budin. The idea to organize the prom project came to Budin when she was driving home from church with her husband. She realized that prom was getting closer and how special an event it is for many students. I didn't want anyone to feel like they can't show. Everyone is welcome to come regardless of their situation, said Bouton. Madison Parkinson is helping with the organizing, and the Villa Grove Devilettes dancers will help students try on dresses during the event. I'm just really excited to see the turnout and see the vision come to life and have the community come together, said Bouton. And the last first page story, SAM Food Pantry to Hold Open House by Margie Wilheimer. The SAM Food Pantry will be holding an open house on Wednesday, March 15th from 6 to 7 p.m. at the Tuscola United Methodist Church. All residents of Douglas County are encouraged to attend. The SAM Food Pantry serves all residents of Douglas County who are experiencing food security issues. Hours of operation are on Wednesdays from 7:30 a.m. to 10:15 a.m. Clients can use the full pantry once a month and can use the pantry every opening in order to get produce, including bread. An Eastern Illinois Food Bank representative will be in attendance, answer questions, and have printed materials available. The SAM Food Pantry uses monetary donations to purchase the foodstuff items that we have available to our clients. We have a truck delivery once a month to keep our shelves stocked. The SAM Food Pantry is staffed by volunteers. Sign-up sheets will be provided if anybody wants to become a volunteer. Light refreshments will be provided. Mark this event on your calendar. We'll move now to the obituaries. Douglas Henry Juergens was born November 16, 1941 in Urbana and passed away unexpectedly after a brief illness in Green Valley, Arizona on February 23, 2023. Funeral services were held Saturday, March 4th at the United Methodist Church of Green Valley, Arizona. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to Friends of Madera Canyon on WISE, www.friendsofmaderacanyon.org. Linda Dawson Astor, age 81, of Roland, Arkansas, danced her way into the presence of the Lord on Wednesday, March 1st, 2023. Linda's life was celebrated with a memorial service Friday, March 3rd at the Trinity Assembly of God in Little Rock, Arkansas, arrangements by our Harris Funeral Home of Morrilltown. Online guestbook www.harrisfuneralhomes.net. Nancy L. Knoll, 77, of Bement, passed away on Tuesday, February 28, 2023 at 4:22 a.m. at the Charleston Rehabilitation and Healthcare Center in Charleston. Graveside services will be held privately for the family at a later date in the Bement Township Cemetery. Memorial contributions can be made to the Albert Parker American Legion Post No. 620 of Bement. Ada L. Pointer, 88, of Arthur, passed away at 3:30 a.m. on Wednesday, March 1, 2023, at the Arthur home. Visitation was held March 3rd at the First Apostolic Church, Arthur. Funeral services were held Saturday, March 4th, at the First Apostolic Church in Arthur. Pastors Gawain Beavis and Tim Froese officiated. The Edwards Funeral Home assisted with arrangements. Billy C. Snyder, 89, of Oakland, formerly of Arcola, passed away at 2:21 p.m. on Wednesday, March 1, 2023, at St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur. Funeral services were held Sunday, March 5, at the Edwards Funeral Home, Arcola. Billy's brother-in-law, Mike and Pat Weaver, officiated. Burial with military rites conducted by the Arcola VFW and the Arcola American Legion were in the Arcola Cemetery. Visitation was held prior to the funeral at the funeral home. Masonic rites conducted by the Oakland Masonic Lodge were held Sunday at the funeral home prior to the visitation. And Nora Mae Sanders, 90, of Arcola, passed away at 5:50 p.m. on Wednesday, March 1st, 2023, at Brookstone Estates in Tuscola. Private burial will be at the Mound Cemetery in Charleston. The Edward Funeral Home is assisting the family. And we have the My Personal Side column by Craig Hastings. You may know this about me if you read the column very often. I'm a fan of the series Ancient Aliens. Even if you don't believe in visitors from space, the program is a wealth of world history information. There's probably six or seven regulars offering up their world experiences and insight of what we're seeing might mean or have meant thousands of years ago. If for no other reason to tune in, anybody should enjoy the world archaeology presented each week. I've watched the same episode 3 and 4 times. Before he passed away, a couple of years ago, my very good friend Doug and I used to watch these episodes religiously, and sometimes we're on the phone with each other talking about what we had just seen in a particular episode. I was skeptical, a disbeliever of sorts, of the whole aliens among us theory 10 years ago. Doug was just the opposite. I can remember Doug talking about the moon and the stars way back in the 80s and 90s when we were running around clubbing together, and almost always. If the night was clear, he would talk about space. Me, back then, all I wanted to do was get home and go to bed. Back then, there weren't many programs on TV that dared to venture into the possibility and probability that alien life once visited Earth. I think back when a person was considered a wackadoo if that person let anyone know that they were a believer. I was probably one of those disbelievers, but did not leave the door open for proof. I was quick to discredit the best I could any theory that aliens existed. I'll admit that part of my disbelief was because I was scared to believe there was life elsewhere, but right here on Earth. Not Doug. Oh no, he was a believer. I used to chuckle inside listening to him talk about alien life. He would always offer up a comical twist on the notion, of course. I was a loner with my thoughts of the whole alien conversation after Doug was gone. Both of my sons, Peyton and Lucas, used to get a kick out of listening to me talk about past alien visitors. Yes, that means they laughed at me. I needed someone to share what I had just learned from the most recent episodes of Ancient Aliens, so they were my captive audience. They both moved out, so they no longer have to endure my ramblings about aliens and UFOs moving around the Earth. Now, who could I share all this alien knowledge with that I've learned from the Ancient Aliens series? I have found one other person now that I share my thoughts and opinions with. There isn't just a big fan base for this show here in Tuscola. I guess that makes me the odd man out. It makes no difference. I'm still a faithful viewer of the series, which has recently started over with all new episodes. Good news. Over the past 2 years, and because the Ancient Aliens series has become so popular, profitable through their business wanting to air their commercials during their program, several other program series have entered the fray. These newest programs don't exclusively concentrate on the alien phenomena, but they definitely lean that way. The federal government releasing video footage of two recent Navy fighter planes shadowing two different UFOs has certainly sparked more interest, too. So I've been having a lot of fun over the years with this and feel like I've learned a lot about the Earth's history through these programs. However, tonight, it's all taking a new twist. I watched the show tonight about asteroids and how they may have affected not only the geography of the Earth, but also life itself. I don't know that bacteria travel for hundreds of thousands of years and miles on asteroids and actually survived impact on Earth and other planets. These bacteria are believed by some scientists to be how life itself started on Earth millions of years ago. Okay, I can grasp that they survived, but I'm skeptical that these are how we may have become the creatures we are. Still, I'm going with maybe the alien theory. The program went on to talk about how humans will need to find a new planet to move to and populate because Earth will once again be struck by another asteroid, wiping out all living creatures. These scientists were very specific and firm in their belief that this event isn't a possibility but will absolutely happen one day. Okay, now this scares me. Even though it's not likely in my lifetime, it still scares me because, in all probability, and I hope my family bloodline will continue into the future, Elon Musk is on a mission to colonize Mars over the next 10 years. Other scientists also agree that Mars is the best bet for us in our future to survive. You know, I was having fun with the whole alien possibility thing going on over the past 10 years, but this asteroid hitting Earth and wiping us out has me wishing I never looked up at the moon and the stars now and just kept my head buried in the sand where my thoughts about simple life on Earth were safe. Oh well, the best minds in the world say it's inevitable, so wake up and live each day to its fullest just in case they're right. And there's a Community Spotlight article, Bethany Sarovka discusses career in Parks and Recreation by Tony Hooker. Bethany Sarovka never intended to have a career in Parks and Recreation. In fact, she saw herself in a completely different role as a public servant. But as often happens, events conspired to lead her to her life's work. Did you always want to be a PE teacher? Actually, I started out in school as a photography major, but I realized quickly that I wanted to pursue something different and I became a PE and health teacher. I taught for about 6 years, but I always worked in recreation during the summer. I grew to love recreation so much more, and I wanted to do it full time, and I've been moving across the United States ever since. I went to North Carolina, to Illinois, then to Colorado, and now I've ended up back in Illinois. She laughed. Where did you go to school? I went to Northern Illinois University. Were you an athlete? I was in high school, big into track and field, but coming from a small town, I did everything. You went to Salt Fork, right? Did you do well at state and all that stuff? We did. I was a distance runner doing relays and that sort of thing. What was your major at NIU? Physical and health education. How did you come to move to North Carolina? In North Carolina, I was still teaching, but I worked for the city of Raleigh over the summer months, and that I moved to Colorado, and that's when I moved into recreation full time. You've been on the job for how long now? 4 days. It's a small sample size, but are you finding the job to be what you expected? I'm very excited to be here and to learn more about this community and to be part of this process of growing and creating this awesome for a town this size. Being from an area when I was in Colorado, I thought how awesome this would be to do something like this in my hometown area. Seidel's not that big, but it's not that far away. Do you envision this as becoming more of a regional facility? In rural areas, there's a lot of sharing that goes on. You have to drive to go places, so I do, but this is also for Villa Grove, and that's where the focus will always be. What do you think your first main task will be? I want to know what the community wants and what the staff wants, what everyone wants to make this place home. What can I do to fill the building and keep everyone happy? Are you going to be polling others? A survey is in the works, and people will soon be aware of it very soon. I know it's only been 4 days, but you've done this before, so do you have a plan for 1 year, 5 years, and so on? That's what I've been working on this week, and has also been getting to know everyone. I do have a timeline and goals that I'm working toward, but I also need to learn about what is best for this community. What do you think your biggest challenge will be? 4 days is too soon to say. Will you be instructing as well? I am certified and able to do so, so it really depends on what I'm needed for as moving forward. I'm willing and happy to do it. You're able to do the administrative piece, step in and officiate a kid's volleyball game if you need to, go out and throw some batting practice, whatever needs to be done. Yep, this is a fun job. What was your main job emphasis in Colorado? I was the recreation supervisor there, and I was all over the sports leagues and senior recreational activities. So you had to hire umpires and all that? Did you have to make sure that the fields were ready to play on? Oh, yes. I've dug fields, chalked them, I've painted soccer fields, I've done it all. I was also at the fitness area, so I've hired fitness instructors as well. Do you think there will be a market for that in Villa Grove? Oh, I hope so. Is there anything else we haven't covered? I just want to say that I'm happy to be here and be part of it. I really can't wait to meet everyone. And Stars to Watch for this week, In the Night Sky by David Lake. Spring is coming, but we still have a great look at the stars of winter this week. As the sun sets, the three belt stars of Orion are about halfway up in the southern sky. Two stars above the three mark Orion's shoulders, and two below of the three mark his knees. Compare the upper left shoulder star to the lower right knee star. Can you see the difference in color? The red star is Betelgeuse, and the blue star is Wriggle. The difference in color is a difference in the surface temperature, with the red star being cooler and the blue star than the blue star. Cool is relative here, as the surface temperatures of Betelgeuse is still about 3,600 degrees Kelvin. That would toast your bread. Well, there's another red star in our sky too, the Eye of Our Bull, Alda Aldebaran, also reddish in color. You can find it by tracing the star belts on the upper right of Orion. Don't confuse Aldebaran with the planet Mars, which sits between the two horns of our bull. And that's about all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying goodbye and see you next week.